Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jeff Wolf is behind the console. Jane Houghton is our producer this morning. And we're going to follow parliamentary procedure today. So we're going to start with old business before we get to the new business, because the old business became new business this week. And what is that business? Well, it's a mess. You may recall that back on September 20th, there was an investigation that started about the agents on horseback down at the Texas border. And there was the incident with the migrants where the photos and the videos taken out of context, and everybody started to say that the migrants were being whipped by the CBP agents and strapped, and it was a major national uproar. The president, the vice president, the secretary of DHS all chimed in and found the CBP agents to be guilty before there was even an investigation. I will remind you of what President Biden said at the time.
It was horrible what to see, as you saw. To see people treated like they did, horses barely running them over, people being strapped, it's outrageous. I promise you, those people will pay. They will be, an investigation underway now, and there will be consequences. There will be consequences. It's an embarrassment, but it's beyond an embarrassment.
The embarrassment is that you jumped to conclusions and threw your own law enforcement agents under the bus. Oh, by the way, you are the chief law enforcement agent in the nation, aren't you, as the president? Well, didn't turn out exactly the way the president, the vice president, and the secretary of Homeland Security had said it did. What happened? Well, yesterday, the commissioner of the Customs and Border Protection Agency, Chris Magnus, held a press conference. In that press conference, he said there was, quote, no evidence that Border Patrol agents struck Haitian migrants with their reins or used whips in Del Rio, Texas. Quite the contradiction with what the president had to say now, isn't it? Here's how Commissioner Magnus summed it up.
OPR investigators determined that the agents involved in the Del Rio activity were not carrying whips. After a careful review and analysis of videos, photos, and eyewitness accounts, this included an interview with a photographer on the scene and other members of the media, OPR found no evidence Border Patrol agents involved in this incident struck any person with their reins, intentionally or otherwise.
So, that's quite the contrast with what the president said. So they do this investigation, but the investigation started September 20th. We're now 10 months later, so they had 10 months to try and figure it out. It was basically debunked 2 days later, but they did spend 10 months investigating. Now, when you have the feds investigating you for 10 months, they're going to come up with something. You know, do you have to kind of maybe bail the president out a little bit, maybe trying to cover his tail just a little bit? So after 10 months, here's what they came up with on the agents.
As a result of these findings, the board proposed specific disciplinary actions for four of the CBP personnel involved. I'm not going to be discussing specifics of the disciplinary proposals today. One agent acted in an unprofessional manner by yelling denigrating and offensive comments regarding a migrant's national origin and gender. This same agent acted in an unsafe manner by forcing his horse to narrowly maneuver around a small child on a slanted concrete ramp. Several mounted agents used force or the threat of force to drive migrants back into the Rio Grande River.
Wow. That's the best they could come up with, huh? Maybe the kid ran in front of the horse. Who knows? But the Biden administration has to blame somebody. So here is the White House press secretary, Corinne Jean-Pierre, placing the blame Oh, not on the migrants. Oh, not on our policy. Not on the lack of leadership that the Secretary of Homeland Security has failed to execute anything down on the border. But remember, he tells us it is secure there. Now, it's all the Texas governor's fault, Greg Abbott. Here's Corinne Jean-Pierre.
So I'll say this, the immigration enforcement is a federal authority, and states should not be mandating it, meddling in it. That is just, especially Texas Governor of Abbott, who has a track record of causing chaos and confusion at the border.
Oh, the Texas governor is the one causing the chaos and confusion. That from Corinne over her head, Jean-Pierre, our White House press secretary. Well, she didn't want to touch the Hunter Biden story. That's the third rail, that's for sure. And she's holding the line and, just basically handling it the way Jen Psaki did whenever there was a question about Hunter Biden. Peter Ducey, one of the favorites of the administration there in the White House press briefing room, he asked the question about the latest revelations on Hunter Biden and the relationship with our now president.
Why is there a voicemail of the president talking to his son about his overseas business dealings if the president has said he's never spoken to his son about his overseas business dealings?
Well, first I'll say that what the president said stands.
And he says, I think you're clear. How is that not him talking to his son about his overseas business dealings?
We're not, from this podium, I am not going to talk about alleged materials from the laptop.
So I
am not going to talk about alleged materials.
So she didn't want to talk about it. But Philip Wegman, another White House reporter, he wasn't satisfied with Corinne's answer, so he followed up.
You seem to dismiss Peter's question about his conversation with his son, Hunter Biden, with regards to his business dealings. And I'm wondering, how is that silence consistent with the president's promise to always level with the American public?
I cannot comment on any materials from the laptop. And I would refer you to the representatives of Hunter Biden.
Okay, nice try, Philip and Peter, but that's what you get. It is 6:16. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. I'm glad that you have joined us this morning. Coming up, we'll talk with Jennifer Harper. She's got some not-so-great poll numbers for the president. They seem to be getting worse than Donald Trump's. Well, that's got to make him feel good at 1,600. We'll also be talking to Jim Trusty and get his read on some of the attacks on Clarence Thomas. That case in New York, you may have seen, a bodega clerk is being attacked. There is a woman with a knife along with the attacker. The clerk stabs the attacker in self-defense. The clerk is racked up on murder charges and sent to Rikers Island. We're going to get into Jim Trusty with that. He's got an interesting read on that case out of New York. John Gizzi will join us, and we'll get his latest perspectives on Boris Johnson. As you know, he has stepped down as Prime Minister in the UK. Also, the assassination of the former Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has made international headlines, and we'll get the significance of that in our conversation coming up with John Gizzi. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer will join us, and we'll talk to him a little more about that incident down on the border and the Customs and Border Protection agents. And then KT McFarland will join us later on this morning. And when we talk to KT, we kind of put it all in perspective, kind of look at the big picture and what it means for us moving forward. So that's a brief look at what's coming up on the Saturday Morning Update. Right now, Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In D.C., on Canal Road in both directions, all lanes are blocked for a fallen tree between Whitehorse Freeway and Arizona Avenue. On 395 westbound in the district, there has been an accident reported after Main Avenue. On 395 southbound in Springfield, disabled vehicle right lane is blocked approaching the Beltway. And on the westbound side of 66 in Falls Church, there is a crash. Two lanes are blocked right at the Dulles Connector Road, exit 67. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert for the remainder of the morning hours. Areas of moderate to heavy rain, localized flooding with temperatures only in the 70s. Showers for this afternoon tapering off later on tonight with gradual clearing and patchy fog by early tomorrow morning. Temperatures will be in the 60s. Tomorrow, a beautiful day. Sunny skies for your Sunday. Temperatures near 80 degrees. We're trending warmer come early next week with highs in the 90s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Steve Rudin, the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It is a very soggy 69 degrees in the nation's capital. 6:19, the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Boy, trying to make sense of the news out of this White House, not an easy task. The team spends the whole week here trying to do it, and as an example, the president has launched a massive attack on the United States Supreme Court. Purpose behind the attack is more so, I think, to try and bail out the November elections than anything else, but he's been on the warpath against our Supreme Court. And these are just a couple of things that he said about the Supreme Court this week. And you can hear in his voice the respect that he shows for that third branch of government.
The court has made clear it will not protect the rights of women, period. The court now practically dares the women of America to go to the ballot box and restore the very rights they've just taken away.
Okay, this is the one I love. This is the one that we're going to put up on the wall. Put a little, you know, they have gold records. You know, the recording artists have gold records and put them on the wall. This is the gold record.
The truth is, today's Supreme Court majority that is playing fast and loose with the facts. I'm asking the Justice Department that, much like they did in the civil rights era, to do something, do everything in their power to protect these women seeking to invoke their rights.
Why do I say a gold record? Because he says the Supreme Court plays loose and fast with the facts. The Supreme Court, with a 200 and some page decision, playing loose with the facts. The commander in looseness with the facts, President Biden, says the Supreme Court plays fast and loose with the facts. Please. Well, that wasn't all he had to say.
So what we're witnessing wasn't a constitutional judgment. It was an exercise in raw political power.
So that is President Biden attacking our Supreme Court. Talking about raw power. Here's a guy who's issued more executive orders than Trump has because he can't get his way, because at least there are enough senators who will stand in the way, slow him down a little bit. And then he's talking about the Supreme Court's raw power, like they're political hacks or something. Goodness gracious. But he is the unifier. I mean, we do remember that President Biden campaigned, running on the idea of unifying the country, calming everything down, getting away from the chaos that President Trump had created. And here, Joe Biden promising at the time that he was going to be the great unifier. I love this.
The third reason I ran was to unify the country, to unify it. That's been the harder part of it right now. No, I'm serious, because we've become so divided.
Yep, the great unifier. Well, I mentioned a couple of minutes ago about Boris Johnson. We've got some audio from Boris Johnson. He was the prime minister in the UK and stepping down. Question mark as to exactly when he'll step down. He wants to stick around, but a lot of people want him out right away. We'll get into the details with John Gizzi, our White House correspondent and chief political columnist, coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. What does it mean for us, and why is he stepping down? A lot of controversy surrounding Boris Johnson, which was the straw that broke the camel's back. Well, we'll find out with John Gizzi, but this is what Bojo had to say as he announced his resignation this week.
It is clearly now the will of the Parliamentary Conservative Party that there should be a new leader of that party and therefore a new Prime Minister. That the process of choosing that new leader should begin now.
And I think he kind of summed it up quite succinctly here.
I want you to know how sad I am to be giving up the best job in the world. But them's the breaks.
Them's the breaks. I want to mention something that you may not hear in too many places. You might have heard this floating around, and you don't know whether it's an internet rumor or what. And that's been the controversy over TikTok and the question marks about whether TikTok is actually a source of information and spying for the Chinese. You've heard this maybe going back and forth a little bit. Well, there is some clarity now, and this is from the Commissioner of the Federal Communications Commission. He is Brendan Carr. He was speaking with Greta Van Susteren on Newsmax earlier this week. And here's what the Federal Communications Commissioner has to say about TikTok. And keep this in mind as you watch those TikTok videos on your phone.
You know, a lot of people look at TikTok and they say, what's the big deal? It's a fun video sharing app for videos and dances. The reality, though, is it operates as a sophisticated surveillance tool, because underneath those videos, they're pulling everything from search and browsing history, location, biometrics, including face prints and voice prints, keystroke patterns, and all that information up to now, we've been told, don't worry, it's stored in the U.S. But recent revelations show that, in fact, a lot of this data has been going back inside of China, despite TikTok's representation. So that's very, very concerning. I'm glad to see Senator Warner and Senator Rubio raising the concerns about misrepresentations about these data flows.
Well, keep that in mind next time you log into TikTok. A couple of notes. The latest to leave the White House, at least that we know of, is the communications director, Kate Bedingfield. Now, she's been around for a long time. She's been a pundit and one of those that stands up for the Democrats on the CNN and MSNBC roundtables and things. Well, she's been at the White House since the president got in. She has announced that she's leaving. Spend more time with family. Where have we heard that before? She's leaving in coming weeks. Interesting headline. This is a headline from NBC News. Quote, almost complete turnover of senior leadership from White House press operations. Well, that was kind of fun. Might have seen the president kind of got into it with the oil industry executives, and he was blaming the mom and pop gasoline operators, blaming the oil companies, blaming everybody but himself, obviously, for the increase in gas prices. Well, the industry wasn't too fond of it. The lobby of the Oil and Gas Association came back at the president. Here's what they had to say. Please make sure the White House intern who posted your tweet registers for Econ 101 for the fall semester. That was the message of the oil industry to the president. It followed earlier stinging criticism from Jeff Bezos. He is one of the world's richest men, owns the Washington Post. He called into question the administration's grasp of supply and demand. And this all in response to the president having told petroleum companies and gasoline station owners they should not be jacking up prices in order to capitalize on the war in Ukraine. The president had tweeted, bring down the price you are charging at the pump to reflect the cost you're paying for the product. Okay. 627, Saturday Morning Update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
In the news at 6:30, the body of Japan's former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has been returned to Tokyo after he was fatally shot during a campaign speech in western Japan. He was attacked in the city of Nara on Friday, airlifted to a local hospital, but died of blood loss despite emergency treatment. Police arrested the attacker, a former member of Japan's Navy. He was arrested at the scene on suspicion of murder. Sri Lankan television is reporting that Sri Lankan protesters demanding the president resign have forced their way into his official residence and nearby office as thousands of people demonstrate in the capital against the island nation's worst economic crisis in recent memory. It was not clear if the president was inside the residence, but footage shot on mobile phones showed a large number of people inside the well-fortified house and on the grounds, as well as swimming in his pool. Elon Musk has announced that he will abandon his tumultuous $44 billion offer to buy Twitter. He says the company failed to provide enough information about the number of fake accounts. Twitter immediately fired back, said it would sue the Tesla CEO to uphold the deal. It's 6:31. This is the Saturday Morning Update, and Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
in Virginia on 395 southbound in Springfield. Disabled vehicle, right lane is blocked approaching the Beltway. On the Beltway in Virginia, no delays on the inner loop or on the outer loop. Now to 66 in Fairfax County. Westbound on 66 in Falls Church, there is a crash. Two lanes are blocked at the Dulles Connector Road. On 95 in Virginia, you're not tapping the brakes between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, northbound and southbound. And on the outer loop of the Beltway in Bethesda, flooding approaching Old Georgetown Road, three travel lanes are blocked. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert for the remainder of the morning hours. Areas of moderate to heavy rain, localized flooding with temperatures only in the 70s. Showers for this afternoon tapering off later on tonight with gradual clearing and patchy fog by early tomorrow morning. Temperatures will be in the 60s. Tomorrow, a beautiful day. Sunny skies for your Sunday. Temperatures near 80 degrees. We're trending warmer come early next week with highs in the 90s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Steve Bruton, the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
69 degrees, 6:32 on the Saturday Morning Update. The Saturday Morning Update continues. Glad you're with us this weekend. Jennifer Harper is with us every weekend. She writes inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
You know, there have been a lot of stories about the media, a lot of polls about the media, but now we got a book about the media, and it's coming from somebody that knows the media, huh?
Oh, yes, indeed. In fact, I can't wait to share the title of this forthcoming book, and here it is, Suppression, Deception, Snobbery, and Bias, Why the Press Gets So Much Wrong and Just Doesn't Care. Now, does that sound like the perfect book about the media?
It's a pretty good description.
Yeah, it is, I think. But anyway, this book is from none other than Ari Fleischer. You will, of course, remember him as White House Press Secretary during a certain time, 2001 to 2003. He's actually now a Fox News contributor and he has a communications company. But this book is pretty interesting. And here's what he has to say. Half the country is keenly aware that they are routinely mocked and looked down upon by much of the media. How the media thinks this is good for America is beyond me. The disdain shown by too many reporters for too many Americans is a major reason why our nation is polarized and divided. It's not just the politicians who are at fault. And I don't think I've heard somebody say something like that lately, but Mr. Fleischer certainly has. He says the mainstream media's small-minded approach to its job is routine dismissal of conservative or populist thought, is an important contributor to our nation's division. This snobbery and lack of respect and understanding of conservatives and populist breeds recently and increased polarization. The media play a significant role in dividing American people. Again, this book is Suppression, Deception, Snobbery, and Bias, Why the Press Gets So Much Wrong. And a couple of the titles here from our friend Ari, Reporters Have Lost Their Minds, and The Way It Was, which is kind of taking a peek at what it was once upon a time. And he also points out that the rehabilitation of journalism is a heavy lift, one which will require the dedication and commitment of journalism school admission officers, reporters, and media executives. Pretty interesting. This book is from Broadside Books. That's the conservative imprint of HarperCollins Publishers. And it arrives on Tuesday.
You mentioned the P word in there, polls. And man, Joe Biden's tanking again, down to a 36 approval rating in one of the polls this week. And I bet Mr. Trump's getting a kick out of that.
Yes, he does indeed. And you're right, that is a 36% approval rating. That came from Ipsos Monmouth University poll that came out. And it wasn't that great a week for the White House because the White House press secretary, Kate Bedingfeld, has turned in her notice and is going to leave sometime this summer. And, of course, you know, the midterm elections are looming on everyone's radar. And so we get this lousy approval rating. So here's a little analysis from New York Magazine, because some of the folks that usually don't pick up on this are beginning to pick up on it. And so according to Ed Kilgore, he is the political analyst for New York Magazine, he says, how low can Biden's approval ratings go? Biden is now polling worse than Trump was at the same point in his presidency. So actually, Trump was doing better after all of the stuff that he went through, he's doing better back in the day than President Biden is doing now. And also CNN pointed out they were wondering how low Mr. Biden's approval was going to go also. And Mr. Kilgore points out that in this point in 2018, Trump's average job approval ratings at Real Clear Politics was 43.2%. Biden's today is at 38.2%, a full 5 percentage points lower. And also, when Election Day arrived in 2018, Trump's job approval rating was virtually unchanged, and his party lost 41 House seats. And he goes on to explain all that went on after that. But it's interesting to note that Trump was doing better at this point in his presidency than President Biden.
We're hearing a lot about the red wave. Some of the pundits are saying, well, not so fast with the abortion decision and gun control. What are you hearing?
Well, I'm definitely hearing lots of red wave talk out there. In fact, there's people are embroidering upon the idea of the red wave arriving in November, just sweeping the Republicans all into office. This is coming from Jim Garrity. He is a National Review columnist, very smart guy, and he's referring to the red tsunami rather than a mere red wave. And he says, as they approach a red tsunami midterm, the Democrats have no one to blame but themselves. Normal Democrats are increasingly open about their disappointment with President Biden. And he also cited this 36% approval rating that sparked on New York Magazine and others. He says, if you follow politics, you know the usual split in these parties by party. Usually only about 10% of the opposition party respondents approve of the job that the president is doing. Usually almost all of the members of the president party approve. And also other people were weighing in, Mr. Garrity pointed out. And this was coming from an unnamed Democratic congressman. This is what he told NBC News. Biden's numbers are in the toilet. Okay, so there you go. And also the Republican Party is, of course, peeking at all these numbers all over again. And Mike Berg, he's a spokesman for the National Republican Congressional Committee. He, too, cites that 36% approval. And he also noticed that economic challenges top the list of voters' worries right now. That includes inflation, gas prices, rising costs of household bills, tuition, housing, and rent. He said, but concern about the abortion issue, which is so important to the Democratic narrative, is only at 5% right now. He says the economy is far and away the biggest issue headed into the midterm, and on that measure, Democrats have been a complete failure. So, boy, the language this week is something else.
A lot of histories have been written about the White House, but you've got a new one to recommend?
Well, yeah, this is actually an old one, but they're coming out with a new version. This is from the White House Historical Association. Very interesting group and very meticulous and kind of big-hearted about everything. They are getting ready to release the 26th edition of the White House An Historic Guide. This offers a room-by-room tour of this is the grandest home in America. It's got new images, behind-the-scene images of the bowling alley, the kitchen, the collection storage, the calligraphy office, the floral shop, the tennis court, and the pool. Sounds good to me. But anyway, they also point out their fold-out pages, wide-angle photos, etc. And this is a book that's over the years have won a lot of awards, and the book is arriving on July 28th, just coming up. If you're curious about that, go to whitehousehistory.org to see this group. And of note, they're currently having their Christmas in July sale. That includes all the White House Christmas ornaments and all that other stuff, if you're curious. Again, that's whitehousehistory.org.
So Barry Goldwater is making headlines in politics again?
Well, yeah, why not? And this is Barry Goldwater Jr. He's the former Republican congressman from Arizona, son of the late U.S. Senator Barry Goldwater, a 1964 Republican presidential nominee. And he has announced his formal endorsement of Walt Blackmun. He is an interesting gentleman all on his own. He is a combat vet who served in the U.S. Army for 22 years, seven tours of duty. He earned a Bronze Star, Meritorious Service Medal. served in Kosovo, Afghanistan, Iraq. He was in the Second Battle of Fallujah. Very distinguished gentleman, and he is now the Republican candidate for Arizona's 2nd Congressional District. So Mr. Goldwater had a say here. He said Arizonans can count on Walt Blackmun to bring conservative values to Congress and to serve the 2nd Congressional District faithfully in Washington, just as he served our country overseas. I am endorsing Walt Blackmun because he is a conservative warrior who will flip this seat red in November. And you know how we're all thinking about flipping then when we get down to November. And the candidate, Mr. Blackmun, also has the endorsement of 17 members of the Arizona State Senate and House of Representatives. He's a pro-life candidate, he says, who counts border security, veterans affairs, criminal justice, Second Amendment rights, and election integrity among his major concerns. If you're curious about him, you can find him at blackmunforcongress.com.
Something I mentioned last week, the war in Ukraine is now just kind of another day at the office in terms of media coverage and the general waning interest in the American public, but it is still on the radar screen for people to help.
Yeah, absolutely, and those people include the United States of America, and I got a Defense Department fact sheet that was issued this week. Very interesting. They say the United States has committed approximately $7.6 billion, this is a new release, by the way, in security assistance to Ukraine since the beginning of the Biden administration, including approximately $6.9 billion since the beginning of Russia's unprovoked invasion on February 24th. And on July 1st, the Department of Defense announced $820 million in additional security assistance for Ukraine. This includes the authorization of a presidential drawdown of security assistance valued at up to $50 million, as well as $770 million in Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative Fund. And if you're curious as to what they spent that money on, the Defense Department also had a 36-item shopping list. Here's a couple of the items on that list. 1,400 Stinger anti-aircraft systems, 6,500 Javelin anti-armor systems, 8 high-mobility artillery rocket systems and ammunition, 2 National Advanced Surface-to-Air Missile Systems, 20 Mi-17 helicopters, 75,000 sets of body armor and helmets, and 18 coastal and river patrol boats. So that was on their shopping list this week. Always interesting to read those.
Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. Thank you, as always.
My pleasure, as always, Rick. Thanks.
You betcha. 6:47, Saturday Morning Update, WMAL. We'll talk to Jim Trustee next, but first, Al B.D. is with us in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In D.C., Canal Road, both northbound and southbound lanes are blocked for a fallen tree between Whitehorse Freeway and Arizona Avenue. On 395 westbound in the district, accident has been reported after Main Avenue. In Maryland, on the Beltway Outer Loop in Bethesda, there is flooding approaching Old Georgetown Road. 3 travel lanes in the right shoulder are blocked. Traffic is jammed from Rockville Pike. And on the BW Parkway northbound in Jessup, you'll find that stop and go between Maryland 32 and the NSA. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert for the remainder of the morning hours. Areas of moderate to heavy rain, localized flooding with temperatures only in the 70s. Showers for this afternoon tapering off later on tonight with gradual clearing and patchy fog by early tomorrow morning. Temperatures will be in the 60s. Tomorrow, a beautiful day. Sunny skies for your Sunday. Temperatures near 80 degrees. We're trending warmer come early next week with highs in the 90s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Steve Rudin, the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Currently 69 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:48 on the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Saturday Morning Update continues. We are joined by Jim Trustee, partner at IFRA Law, and he is the former chief of the Organized Crime and Gang Section at the U.S. Department of Justice. See him a lot on the Fox News Channel and other news outlets. Jim, good morning. Good to have you with us.
Sure. Good morning, Rick. Good to be here.
Well, the attacks on Clarence Thomas, the Supreme Court Justice, continue, as well as the protests at the homes of the conservative Supreme Court justices. And first off, the whole question of why the Attorney General will not enforce the federal statute that prevents protesters from attempting to influence justices by protesting at their homes. The chief security officer of the Supreme Court has had to ask the Virginia and Maryland governors and the chairman of the Fairfax and Montgomery County Boards of Supervisors to do something about it. And nobody seems to be doing anything.
Now, these are really pathetic moments in law enforcement. I guess I have to put quotation marks around law enforcement. I mean, look, this attorney general, he's apparently had some people say that they have concerns about the constitutionality of 18 U.S.C. 1507. That's the statute that deals with obstruction of justice at a Supreme Court justice's home. The statute's very clear. It's very similar to other obstruction statutes where the gravamen of the crime is the intent. In other words, if you are intending by your actions to intimidate or influence the Supreme Court justice, then that's really the heart of the crime. And you can raise a First Amendment defense if you were charged as a protester, but it probably isn't going to go that far, because when you talk about First Amendment analysis, which is all about time, place, and manner, you're kind of losing out on place and manner. You know, when they say you've got loud protests taking place on the streets of Chevy Chase at the home of a Supreme Court justice, you know, your defense attorney is already behind the eight ball trying to raise a First Amendment claim. But bottom line is, this attorney general has been extremely politicized. He's made a decision to not involve federal resources in protecting the Supreme Court justices, or at least the conservative ones, even after an attempted assassination. And I just think that's outrageous that you've had a guy come all the way across the country and you're still not changing your approach. Now, on the local side, there may not be any real profiles and courage politically here either. I don't think anybody wants to have ownership of this situation. But you do have at least some potential laws in place, state or county laws that deal with disorderly conduct, disturbing the peace, blocking ingress and egress into neighborhoods. So you have, you know, kind of low-grade nuisance misdemeanors that could be employed. And again, the whole point is not to have a whole bunch of prosecutions and a body count, but to actually disperse the crowds, to say, you folks are breaking the law, you got to leave, you know, we'll let you protest at the Supreme Court, but we're not going to let it happen here. And really, nobody's taking the lead to do that, which I think is just an embarrassment.
You said something, and I just want to get a clarification. I believe you said that Garland was surrounded by some bureaucrats or attorneys who questioned the constitutionality of the federal statute. What gives them the right not to enforce a federal statute just because they don't seem to feel that it's constitutional? Don't you do something about that and either repeal the statute or enforce it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, it comes off as a very convenient, belated analysis, right? Now that there's an issue at the home of Brett Kavanaugh, you suddenly decide you've checked the books and you don't think the law is on point. It would have a lot more credibility if they had gone to the Office of Legal Counsel at DOJ at some point in the history of DOJ and said, you know, we've got concerns about this statute. It looks unconstitutional. That never happened. And so, you know, again, it seems to me a very convenient kind of out without a whole lot of actual substance to it at this point.
Okay, so there's a petition floating around out there to impeach Justice Clarence Thomas. What are the grounds for the impeachment?
The grounds are we really, really don't like him, which is, you know, real new grounds for impeachment. This is an online petition brought by the people at moveon.org, if you remember that entity, which apparently still exists. And they barely say anything except, you know, this guy's going to endanger our rights, based in, I guess, in part on his concurrence in the Dobbs case. And also a little bit of a smattering of gratuitous comments about his wife being a sympathizer, Donald Trump. The sad part of the whole story is not that moveon.org can generate an online petition. It's that 1 million people have apparently signed it, and they're signing it specifically saying impeach this justice. It's amazing to me. I mean, you and I talked about this over the last few years, that the currency of impeachment has gotten so cheapened as to be meaningless. And that's kind of where we are. People throw out the word impeachment, without even having a crime in mind, just we really don't like this guy. So I suspect Justice Thomas will survive. And knowing him, he might even make a wisecrack about it at some point. But it's really, again, a disgraceful show of civics in the United States that so many people would sign a meaningless and misguided attempt to get him off the bench.
So Derek Chauvin, the Minneapolis police officer found guilty of the murder of George Floyd, serving a 22-year state prison sentence for the murder of George Floyd, he ended up with yet another 20 years on Friday?
He did, and this is a little bit of a procedural devil-in-the-details story, but I think, again, it speaks volumes about the priorities of the current Attorney General and the Department of Justice. In the old days, Rick, back when I was a prosecutor, if there was a civil rights case to be brought against a police officer or a number of police officers, the idea was it's a backup, you know, that the states have primary jurisdiction, kind of a federalism issue here. The states are the ones that typically handle things like murder and manslaughter. And we're only here in the background in case there's some egregious, you know, miscarriage of justice where perhaps, you know, all white officers in a shooting of a black male unreasonably are acquitted. And in fact, if you go back and look at civil rights prosecutions for the Department of Justice, one of the more famous ones was Stacey Coons and the L.A. Police Department officers who beat Rodney King and who were acquitted in state court. And you can have debates as to whether or not the acquittal was legitimate or racist or whatever, but that was kind of the model for civil rights prosecutions, that they sit back and backstop the state prosecutors and make sure that justice is served. We started to see a little bit of an acceleration of their decision-making with cases like Dylann Roof, the Charleston church shooter, who was, you know, by all accounts, a horrific human being that did a horrific amount of harm. Civil rights jumped into that case while the state case was pending, and it created a lot of tug-of-war issues. But at the end of the day, justice was served. Well, in the Derek Chauvin case in Minnesota, civil rights charged their offenses very early on. They didn't wait to see what happened. And by all accounts, the Chauvin trial, verdict, and sentencing were fair. So it was a very strange position to say, okay, now you're going to have a second charge, a civil rights violation, so there's no double jeopardy issue, brought by the federal government against you, and you're going to be fully prosecuted. The problem is for the defendant in that situation, well, he's already got 21 years in state court. If the feds offer you a concurrent plea, you almost have to take it, because otherwise you're risking a consecutive sentence where you get more real time. So in this case, at the end of the day, Chauvin pled guilty with a guarantee that he'd get a concurrent sentence, and he did. He got 22 years concurrent, which practically means if he's released from parole in the state system, he might have a little bit of time in the federal system waiting for him, but decent chance it all expires around the same time. So the point of all that is to say, Rick, the resources and the political stance the DOJ is taking on these high-profile cases is a waste of resources, and it is a kind of piling on in a circumstance where there is no injustice that really required their intervention. And we're seeing that across the board in these police shooting cases, and ultimately, the defendants usually end up pleading guilty, but you're going to have one that says, I'm not going to take the deal. And then you have a lot of issues that come from having a second trial, including possible discovery violations and appellate issues that infect the first trial. So this is not the safest route DOJ is taking. It's politically appealing to them, but it's unnecessary, and it's a change of pace and really a slap in the face of federalism notions.
We're going to continue our conversation with Jim coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. A couple of other stories we want to get into, including the clerk in New York. You probably have heard that he was attacked. There was the attacker, and the attacker's girlfriend had a knife. The clerk fought back, killed the attacker, and they charged the clerk with murder, sent him to Rikers. Well, how does that sit with Jim Trusty? And we'll find out coming up right after we talk to John Gizzi in the 7 o'clock hour. So stay with us right here on the Saturday Morning Update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.